Welcome to First Turn, where we play board games for the first time and discuss our immediate reactions. It's like book club, but for board games. I'm Eric, and with me is Kiwi and BP.
Hello.
Hi.
And we also have a special guest, Paxton.
Hello.
So, Paxton, you're here to play some board games and talk about those games. What kind of games do you normally like to play?
I like to play miniature combat games, so Flames of War, War Machine, then I also like card games like Sushi Go Party, Magic the Gathering. I like strategy, like Stratego, chess.
I feel like strategy goes into those tabletop board games too.
Yeah.
What about co-op games?
I like Pandemic.
Do you like competitive or cooperative better?
Do you like to beat your dad or win with your dad?
I prefer beating my dad.
That's what I thought.
But it's still pretty fun to beat or win with him.
Who do you prefer to backstab? Kiwi or BP? Yes.
He's pointing to at his Kiwi, dad. Yes.
Yeah. Obviously. He's the one who always beats me at Mario Kart, so I should beat him at something.
Yeah, he's really annoying. He wins a lot of games. We don't like him either.
I mean, when I beat him, I gloat about it, so.
Yes. All right. Well, welcome to the podcast.
Welcome to the podcast. Our first guest.
Yep.
Possibly our last.
If they're all going to beat up on me, we're not going to allow any more guests.
All right. So we're going to be playing Sushi Roll, designed by Phil Walker Harding of Sushi Go Party, Baron Park, Imhotep, Gizmos. We're not sure who the artist is. I guess it's not listed. It's possibly
Nanrung Sima.
Yep, Nanrung Sima, who did Sushi Go and Sushi Go Party, but I guess it is not listed, and it is published by Gamerate. The description is, Rice and Dice, roll with your favorite Sushi Go characters in Sushi Roll, a dice-based version of the best-selling card game. Load up the conveyor belts with savory sushi dice, and then pick one and pass the rest. Each point for a winning combo, like two tempura or a set of sashimi. Grab a menu to re-roll your dice or use chopsticks to swap with an opponent, and be sure to save room for the pudding at the end. Mechanics, dice rolling. Box art is a bunch of sushi, animated sushi, and a boat.
They're very cute.
And one on a raft. You got rejected. So based on all that, would you be interested in this game?
I believe the answer is yes, because we enjoy Sushi Go.
As well as Sushi Go Party.
Sushi Go Party. I enjoy the art because it reminds me of the type of like mascots and other anime characters you'd have in Japanese restaurants and stores. And I always enjoyed that when I lived in Okinawa. So
I also just enjoy sushi.
So. Right. Yes. Yeah, both. That. There is a hunger element to these
sushi
games.
Sushi is awesome.
Mr. Paxton, would you pick it up off the shelf?
I would definitely pick it off the shelf, but... Yeah, I mean, I'm not paying, so I don't know if you get it. So,
well, you know,
fortunately, he buys all the games.
So. Yeah. I also loved Sushi Go and Sushi Go Party. The art is the same as the last one, and sounds really fun.
Yeah, I feel like
can't wait to beat Dad.
If we talk about the art more in a section, I can't remember, but just to put this out there. To game right, they should really capitalize on the cuteness of their art and make a bunch of swag.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
So there you go, game right, get on that.
Yeah.
That
influencer.
Art, please endorse us and send us all the swag. Thank you.
Kids and businessmen.
Somebody's now doing the outro. All right, BP, tell us about sushi.
My immediate when I thought about the history of sushi was going to an Alton Brown episode of Good Eats. So for all of you who are familiar with his show, Good Eats, where he gives kind of both the science and recipe and history of certain types of foods. Shout out to Alton Brown. if he ever listens. There was an episode he did once called Wake Up Little Sushi. And he kind of briefly talked about the background. I couldn't find the episode because, of course, Food Network doesn't have their stuff up on YouTube. But I remember when he was talking about it, he had talked about how it was very convenient that it was very finger food for especially those who were in Edo, Tokyo at the time, who were gambling and whatnot, playing card games, because you could still hold, like, for say, your deck of cards in one hand while eating sushi, and I am making the gestures of picking up little nigiri sushi in my fingers and putting it in my mouth.
With a claw hand? Yeah. Is that how you eat
sushi? Anyway, the actual origins come from possibly much older and from outside of Japan. Some textual evidence state all the way from the 8th century. However, what we tend to see and eat as sushi did develop during the 19th century, especially with street vendors in Edo, now Tokyo, and especially that nigiri sushi. So the sticky rice with the flat slab of raw fish on the top. It was meant as a form of fast food. So your McDonald's, if you will, or your food truck, and became, of course, extremely popular and is now a worldwide phenomenon. One last thing that Kiwi asked me to bring up in my history lesson is to make sure that I mentioned about wasabi, because it makes a play in the game if you've played Sushi Roll or Sushi Go Party. However, here in the United States, what we call wasabi is not actual real wasabi. It is just horseradish and mustard and food coloring. The real wasabi, of course, is the Japanese horseradish root that then requires grating. It's still a very fine product that you can find very rarely.
I've been to at least 3 sushi restaurants in Okinawa where the chef all claimed to have been the one who invented the California roll.
Wow. Maybe there's a collaboration. Yeah. Disputed a patent on it.
Yeah. And also Planet Money podcast, shout out to NPR's Planet Money, just recently did an episode on some Norwegian salmon company getting the Japanese to actually eat salmon sushi.
I remember you telling me about
that. Yeah, they previously would not eat raw salmon.
So the rules. So the game's played over 3 rounds, and the player with the most points at the end of 3 rounds is the winner. So during the round, each of the players is going to start with a certain number of dice, and that number of dice is based on the number of players we have. So very similar to Sushi Go in terms of the number of cards that you start with. Everyone is going to roll the dice that they have, and then they are going to select one of those dice. Once everybody has selected, the conveyor belts they sit on are going to move to the next player.
So like a Sushi Go round?
A Sushi Go round, exactly. So we're going to roll, and then the next person is going to take those, now decreased by 1 number of dice, roll those, and select from those portions. So the dice are... So there's maki dice, there's sashimi dice, there's ones that have chopsticks, menus, and wasabi. So the scoring is very similar, but the dice are specific to that type of thing. So like the sashimi dice only has sashimi, but it goes through the 3 different types of sashimi. The maki dice only has maki. It just goes through the 1, 2, or 3 number of maki.
I'm hungry.
Me too.
You can use a menu token, which you can get. You'll start the game with a menu token, but you can also roll and get a menu token. You can use those to swap one of your die with another player. And then you can use chopsticks. Oh, sorry. That's the chopsticks is swapping with another player. The menu lets you re-roll one of your dice. Once all the dice are gone, then you'll score at the end. So just like Sushi Go, if you have the most maki, you get 6 points. If you have the second most, it's 3 points. Sashimi has its own scoring for each one. If you have it on wasabi, it triples it. Tempura, if you have 2 of tempura, for every 2 you have, you get more. So the scoring is very similar to Sushi Go. And then the only real change from regular Sushi Go, the pudding is more like desserts in Sushi Go Party, where you don't score it at the end of the round, you score it at the end of the game. So you collect pudding as you go through each round, and you score it at the very end.
Well, the description did say to save room for pudding.
That's right. So this is more, it's a little bit of Sushi Go Party with mostly the bits and pieces you see from Sushi Go, because like the menu is from Sushi Go Party, whereas chopsticks are from both, but came from Sushi Go.
Well, I'm curious to see what then is inside that box. So Let's play.
We just finished a game of Sushi Roll. To recap, Paxton had 36 points, Kiwi had 39 points, I had 39 points, and PB had 39 points. But BP won on the tiebreaker with her hoarding of the pudding.
I don't know if it's called hoarding.
I mean, it's a classic Sushi Go
move.
Yeah. Just take that
pudding. Still hoarding the pudding.
Yeah.
So what was your winning strategy?
BP? Me? Mm-hmm.
The winner?
Going for as much pudding as you can possibly get. There you go. It's all about the pudding.
Yeah. Anybody else have a strategy they want to talk about?
I mean, I tried to do the same strategy I do with Sushi Go, which is just like look to see what other people have and either take cards or in this case, dice that they would need so they can't get them. But then also go for things that would help me occasionally. I think this one's a little bit easier because you know for sure what's coming up. So like there was a round where Eric took a wasabi because he knew he was about to get there was like two or three nigiri dice. So you knew you were going to have something to put on it. And BP did the same thing in a different round. Whereas in Sushi Go, you have to sort of like remember like, oh, crap, what was in that
one
that I saw two rounds ago or two swaps ago? Because that's the one that Eric's got. And so I got to like, what do I need to take? What do I think he's going to take? It's a little bit easier here because you can see what kind of dice you're going to get.
Did you have a strategy, Paxton?
Take things that had high amounts on them.
Okay, that's a strategy.
That is a strategy. Yeah,
probably better than my strategy.
And I would have beat all of them if I hadn't had the least amount of pudding.
Yep. So what we're concluding here out of the strategy segment is pudding.
Don't neglect the pudding.
Yeah, you always got to get the pudding.
So what do you think of the theme?
I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think the theme fits, and I think the pieces fit the theme with the conveyor belts and all that stuff.
The conveyor belt is very cute.
Yeah.
I think it just builds on the other sushi games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think having the conveyor belt and kind of the sushi menu kind of gives it more flavor than the other ones we've played.
Yeah.
Flavor.
Yeah.
Ta-dum-bum.
So the art. We kind of discussed it on the pre that we all really like the kind of anime art style.
Yeah.
But what about the components? And let's focus on that because these are much different than the previous games.
Yeah, I think the art is super cute. Again, like Sushi Go and Sushi Go Party, the little cards you get for the pudding, all the little menu you get. I think it's very clear and, I mean, typical Sushi Go style. I mean, even the little menu on the reroll thing, you can totally see a hand cut roll on there. And yeah, I think they've done a great job.
I think the conveyor belt was a cool sort of component to make the passing of the dice kind of super smooth.
It definitely fit the theme.
Yeah, and it makes sense. Around. It just fits in. It was a good add. Because it could have just been roll your dice and pass your dice.
Right.
Right.
But I mean, that also made it easy to pass the dice as well.
Right.
So I think the only thing, I thought the dice were pretty easy to read.
Mm-hmm.
I think depending on how big your table is and how far away, because I know there was a time where Eric thought I had a squid nigiri. It was actually salmon because he couldn't see it that far across the table. I think we talked about colorblind friendliness.
Yeah.
And it's hard to tell when you're not yourself colorblind, but I think there are a couple of the green, specifically the menus, that might be difficult. I think other than that, everything is shaped very differently.
Yeah.
So it might be okay for those who are colorblind.
Mm-hmm. I think overall it's pretty good because there's at least distinct symbols on each one.
Yeah.
So.
How about you, Paxton? Anything about the art?
It's really cute. Pretty distinct figures, making the figures from the cards smaller, but you can still see the details in them.
So mechanics.
I thought that I thought
you
it was,
started. Well, yeah, he was still I started. Staring.
You know
at
what?
Me.
I've decided to start and give you a break.
Oh.
Yeah. I thought the mechanics. It was a cool, different implementation of a game that uses cards, and I thought it worked well. I did we talked about it a little bit ago with I can make my dice selection based on what I know I'm going to get or what I think I'm about to get because that person before me probably hasn't gone yet.
Right.
Or has gone the way it should work. So I know what I'm about to get and I can make my choices based on that. So I thought it was a good mix because it used stuff that I like from Sushi Go Party, like keeping the desserts until the end, and then the chopsticks and the menus. So I like that, but then keeping it simple, which is what you get with Sushi Go. There isn't a lot of swapping in and out that you get with Sushi Go Party.
Yeah, I think though the scoring each round, while good, it's obviously also keeping track, and you're having to turn in your cards all the time. The coins, because you only have so many, I think that got just a little cumbersome.
I wish that instead of doing the score discs like they have, because that was kind of fiddly trying to get it all out, the score board like they have in Sushi Go Party, which was just a normal score tracker with pawns to go around it.
Yeah.
I would have preferred that
over the discs. The discs were a little... Yeah. So,
but that's my only complaint about like gameplay mechanics-wise was just that particular component. Like I'd almost rather just pen and paper like you do with Sushi Go.
I would say in general, I prefer just a score tracker versus coins, unless the coins are also being used as money in some form.
But I also do really like how I think the reroll and the swapping especially was pretty invaluable, and especially your strategy of trying to prevent people from having their cards or dice, I guess.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I think I like dice more than cards in general. So I like that. And I like that, you know, Sushi Go is much more about remembering the hands, which I'm never very good at.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I like having the dice out that you can see and kind of think about.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. The rules.
The rules are pretty super simple. And if you've played Sushi Go or Sushi Go Party.
So we had one big rule blunder.
Yeah. And I think that's just because I have a lot of rules in my head.
I don't think that's the case. I think we we all rolled the dice and then we all started grabbing the dice we wanted and putting them in our tray instead of taking turns and going around.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a pretty normal reaction. Roll dice, you grab your dice.
It's also what you get from Sushi Go, because there isn't a way for you to take cards from somebody else in Sushi Go, because the chopsticks in Sushi Go are you get to draw an extra card. And the menu, I forget what the menu does in Sushi Go Party, but like there was an effect. So we were just playing it's Sushi Go with dice.
I played Sushi Go like one time, so that wasn't it for me. Sure. I think it is just natural that you roll dice, you grab the dice.
Right.
And you even said, you were pretty clear, the one with the red border goes first.
Right.
We all heard that.
Yeah.
We all still grabbed our dice. So I think it's just something that I bet a lot of people have that issue, where they just roll and then they grab what they want and then... move on.
They're confused about
it. And we were confused on how the swap worked, because does he just have to race me to grab my thing? And that seemed really not the style of game.
Yeah.
So then we kind of...
Do you think, though, someone not having played Sushi Go or Sushi Party Go?
Sushi Go Party.
Anyway,
Sushi
yeah.
Go Party.
Yeah. Yeah. Could pick this up and figure it out pretty easily.
Yeah.
I think it depends on the person. Some people have a hard time with all
the scoring
values of all the scoring and the things. I've noticed that with Cat Lady, Sushi Go, those kind of games. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of these combos to this and these add up to that.
Yeah.
I don't think it's hard. I just think some people have a harder time with.
Yeah, because I was really confused on the scorecard, the end of game, if it was how many chopsticks you had divided by how many.
Oh, yeah. Sure,
yeah.
How many minions you had, then times two, then you only get 1 point. I was super confused.
Right. All right. Player interaction.
Very interactive in a very positive way. You know, you were watching what everybody has so you can figure out if you're going to have the most. You're taking people's stuff off of their conveyor belts. You're looking ahead to see what dice they have so you can plan.
Yeah, and it's enough player interaction for a game that isn't really take that.
Mm-hmm.
There is a little bit with I can take a die off your, but I have no idea if you're going to use that die. It's just something that
unless there's an early pudding grab.
Sure, right, yeah.
That's pretty obvious that people are going to go for that.
But. Yeah.
Yeah, if there's only one pink dice out there.
But it's also a game where you're focused on what you need, but you do have to pay attention to what everybody else is playing in order to be more strategic about the dice that you do take.
Right. I think I had the most interaction of any of the sushi games.
Yeah, I'll agree. Because the other ones, it's mostly just stuff that affects you.
Right, and you can maybe plan to grab a card that you think somebody else is going to want, but that's a little different than looking at somebody's tray, everybody looking at everybody's tray, and then grabbing what they want.
How about you, Paxton? Player interaction.
There was a lot. You did have to pay attention to other people's boards. I haven't played the other sushi games in a while, so I don't remember how much player interaction there was.
All right. Would you play it again?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
My only complaint is portability. I think the great thing about Sushi Go is it's so portable because it's just a deck of cards. With this one, the box is a lot bigger. You got all the dice.
I do feel like the box is bigger than it needs to be.
I think it is as well. I mean, there's a very large insert with a lot of empty space. And I think even when you fill up the space that they have available, there's still more space. Yeah. I think the box is bigger than it needs to be.
Yeah, looking at that insert, that's probably the size the box could have been.
Yeah.
You could make your own. Like, if you just wanted to, like, take it everywhere, you can just make it the size of, like, the sheets. Not sheets, the cardboard boards with, like, the scoring on them.
Mm-hmm.
You could make it by this and then add a inch around it, and that should be the size of the box.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You could, but I think they should make the box the right size.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I just think that, like, this is a game that you can take to the game store or wherever you do board game club right. to play, whereas Sushi Go can be something that you put in your backpack and play in the airport. That being said, I did really enjoy it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you'd play it again?
I would definitely play it again.
Yeah, I would also play it again. I think I liked it more than the other Sushi Go's. I like having the more pieces. Portability is not that big of a concern to me. You're just obsessed with putting things in your quiver.
It's true.
Which means say, like, that sounds real gross.
He loves his quiver.
Yeah, I mean, overall, it's good. So in the sushi off, I said this is my favorite. Where does it rank in the sushi spectrum for you all?
I would need to play the other ones again. I don't know, I kind of put them all in the same place. Like, Sushi Go gives you the portability. Sushi Go Party gives you variability because there's so many different things you can feed into it because you don't play with all the cards. And this, I agree with you in terms of it's really nice to see what everybody's score is, what everybody has, so you don't have to remember the hands. So I almost put them on, like, the same level, I think. I
if you had to keep one, which would you keep?
Ooh.
The look of horror. Yes.
I have to get rid of something? Probably Sushi Go, just because smaller box, more portable.
Where are you playing all these portable games at?
Well, I have played games in the airport.
And on the airplane.
And on the airplane.
You, Paxton, which of the three is your favorite?
Ranking, number one, Sushi Roll. Ranking, number one, Sushi Go Party. Ranking, number one, Sushi Go.
All right, so they're tied.
Okay.
So the boy and I agree. So we do it.
The indecisiveness is a hereditary trait.
I apparently, not for me. So, I don't know. I really liked Sushi Roll, I think. I do remember really enjoying Sushi Go when we played and loving Sushi Go Party. So it's, I think it is a really hard decision, but the components again of this are so fantastic.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Like I had said a little bit back, I feel like they've nailed it with the whole sushi theme has just really come together.
I agree.
And if they do a tracker, I think for your points, or even, I think again, so it was like a sheet on a menu somehow that you tracked your points. Mm, you know how those other sushi restaurants you go where you just mark what you want?
Oh, that's genius.
Oh, yeah. So you could do like a cardboard tracker that is like a sushi menu. At
right. Yeah, that you, place, would, like you would write on. Except it has numbers going on. Yeah. I think that was what you were saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I got that. I just think cool. Writing in general, I think like usually a token, like that's the higher end.
Yeah.
A nice wood token to put on the spot. Token.
If only it was a metal box, like Sushi Go and Sushi Go Party.
And would then the little tokens for the tracker, would they be like the little pans that you get the soy sauce and the...
I mean, I think that's going a little far.
Is
it? I mean, Sushi Go Party is just pawns, so... But yes, if you wanted to, like, really trick out your...
Yeah.
So, Game Right, we are available for development. Next, we're going to be playing King Domino, designed by Bruno Cathala. Round three for him. Of Seven Wonders Duel, Five Tribes, Shadows Over Camelot, Conan, Queen Domino, Mission, Red Planet. The artist is Cyril Bouquet. It's published by Blue Orange Games, and it was the 2017 Spiel des Jahres winner over Escape from El Dorado and Magic Maze, which we've previously discussed. You are a lord seeking new land to expand your kingdom. You must explore all the lands, wheat fields, lakes, mountains, in order to spot the best plots. But be careful, as some other lords are also coveting these lands. The mechanics are card drafting, pattern building, and tile placement. Have we played pattern building?
No. I mean, we sort of did with Patchwork, I think. There was a little bit of pattern building there, but I think that was more tile placement and less pattern building.
Okay, I'm interested.
Doesn't role player have a little bit in the... Scoring.
I think role players probably Azul. We have, and Azul, I think, would definitely be more pattern building as well.
Look at me. Mechanics.
I know. I'm so proud of you. You're coming in.
Yeah. I said Azul too.
That's true.
And the artwork is a little kind of fantasy castle with some plots of land and sheep and stuff.
Yeah, it looks kind of kidsy. And it's cartoon depiction of a medieval village.
Might be why we picked it to play with the kids.
Right. Yeah. Yes. No, very kidsy.
It's supposed to be a very good game. It won awards.
Well, yeah, it won. I mean,
he's glaring at me.
No, I mean, I've got like some serious expectations because the two games that have beat out that we've played, we really enjoyed. So
I can't get a read on if she enjoyed Toad Trail.
Oh, well, okay. So it's That's right. Okay. I was only lukewarm about that one, but I did really love the Magic Maze. Right. So, okay. So the expectations are high in that because I really loved Magic Maze. But Seven Wonders Duel, you guys did, and you weren't like super impressed.
So we've played two Bruno Cathala games.
Five Tribes, we weren't very impressed. So, I mean, I'm definitely curious. I don't know like if that would make me pick it up off the shelf, though, knowing already that it's, I mean,
yeah, it would deter me.
I want to see how much better it is, but I'm also a little hesitant.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Paxton.
If you didn't know, like, and you hadn't played any of his other games before, would you still pick it up?
That is a very good question.
I'll be honest, I've avoided it. It was never really on my list because, I don't know. I don't know if it's the kind of the artwork or something about it didn't really appeal to me.
I feel like that medieval cartoony theme is done.
Exactly. So, yeah.
And there's nothing based on its description. Not knowing that it was an award winner or who the maker was to make me be like, oh, yes.
So the name is King Domino. So I assume dominoes are involved, but nothing about the description or the imagery lets me know how that plays in.
Yeah. So which brings us to the history piece, because based on its title alone, this is how little I have going into some of these.
We like to keep everyone in the dark. Only Kiwi really looks things ahead.
I thought it would be about dominoes. And not that I really love the game of dominoes so much, but I know that it is an ancient game. As with all games, China, of course, lays claim to its many origin stories. And that China just has the origins for many things. I mean, it makes sense. Historically, they were a very sophisticated civilization, of course, with its own long history. But the game we have come to know as dominoes is, at least those of us in the United States, is from a European kind of twist on dominoes that then traveled from China, in that 17th, 18th century.
Is that when Marco Polo?
No, this was after Marco Polo. It would have been.
I really don't know.
Much about that. Yeah.
Silk Road.
Yeah, this would have still been. This would have been.
That was the deep way.
We're thinking of a game.
Post Christopher Columbus, when you've got the whole global exchange, and especially with the silver trade going on. But I did find an interesting quote because then we also thought about like brainstorming the idea of bones and throwing bones, because apparently, right when you play dominoes, you throw bones, and that is actually from a 19th century saying where they would go over disputes over traditional grazing boundaries, where they referred to it as bone sticks.
Like cattle?
Yeah. So again, when you think about the context, you definitely want to make sure, right? The dividing of land took place in England during this time. And so if you're talking about then dominoes making its way over and as a form of settling disputes, maybe then it fits into the theme of the medieval.
Sure.
Yeah, I was going to throw in that I've also stayed away from it because it seemed, not having read a whole lot about it, it seemed like a kid's game just based on the art and the age and how long it took.
Mm-hmm. Which is again why we're picking it. Yeah. Doing a family.
But then second guessing again because Bruno Cathala, the two games we have played. So I'm 100% on board. It was just like, I did not enjoy either of those games. So I'm curious to see how this one goes based on having played the other ones as well.
To clarify, it's not a kid's game. It's a more family-friendly game, but it's not like it's supposed to be
Right, very fun for adults.
Yeah. Also, I think King Bonesticks would have been a much better
one. Yeah, right?
Who wants to play King Bonesticks?
I would be, yeah.
It might make me look twice.
Yeah. That would make me pick it up off the shelf, even though I'm not paying.
Rules. The game ends when the last tile has been selected, and then points are going to be awarded per property. And a property is just a connected area with the same type of landscape. So there's, I think, five different types of landscapes. There's water, mountains, swamps, like grasslands, and something else I can't remember right now.
Is this Carcassonne-esque?
No, because that one's more tile.
We'll find out.
So when we begin the game, everyone's going to have their own one-by-one castle tile. And then we're going to lay out a number of tiles equal to the number of players. And then we're going to play order is randomly selected, so our favorite. And each turn, a player is going to select the tile that they want. Now, it's going to do two things. One, that's going to select the play order for the next round. So if you select the tile closest to the box, you will go first on the next round. But it might not be the tile that you necessarily want. And then what's going to happen is you don't get to take it immediately. You're going to place your meeple next to that tile, and then we're going to set out a new set of tiles. So when you pick up your meeple to go, you're going to take the tile that you picked during the last round and then select your new tile and then place your tile. So when you place the tile from the round before, you'll know what you're going to get for placement for the next one. So that might change where you put the tile. There's a couple of placement rules. So the new tile has to be touching either the starting tile or connected to a tile that was laid previously as long as the landscapes match. So I think that's where the domino idea comes in, because the tiles are all split in half. So you could have tiles that are, I think desert is the fifth one. So you could have desert on one side and grass on the other. Or it could be like, you know, you got the double sixes, double five dominoes. Mm-hmm. You could have grass on both sides. And then the other piece is you're trying to keep it to a 5x5 grid. So anything that goes outside that 5x5, it won't score, it won't do anything. That tile will come out and be discarded.
So each player has their own 5x5 grid?
Correct. We're all building our own kingdoms.
So we each get to like place land in 5x5?
Yeah. Based on my patchwork skill, this is not looking good.
So at the end of the game, the scoring areas for a specific landscape will be multiplied by the number of squares and the number of crowns. So some of the grids will have, or some of the tiles will have crowns on them. So say you have a landscape of, you know, five grasslands and only two crowns, you would get 10 points for that property. But you could have multiple properties if they don't touch. So like you get a green at the top and green at the bottom. If they don't touch, that would be two properties and they would score on their own. If there's no crowns, it's times zero, and any number times zero is?
Zero.
Perfect. Education's working. The starting tile does not need to be the center of your kingdom. So you could have it be the top left, top right. It just has to be somewhere in that 5x5. So you don't have to make it your center.
So let's play.
We just finished a game of King Domino. To recap, Kiwi had 30 points, I had 31, Paxton had 46, and BP won with 58 points.
Woo-hoo!
We continue our string of victories over Kiwi. So strategy, what was your winning strategy?
To match as many of my landscapes, and hopefully with pieces that had crowns on them.
Sounds like a good strategy. We all attempted that one. Paxton actually did the best job of doing his 5x5 and having his castle in the center. So his looked a lot nicer.
It was very neat. Mine was not.
BP kind of won with a set of water pieces with three crowns
on it. She had a big lake and a big desert. It gave her a ton of points.
Yeah. I thought that was farmland.
I think the desert was
yellow.
Barren. Yeah,
barren.
So what did you think of the theme?
I mean, the theme was just, it's a Euro. So like the theme isn't super important.
Weren't we confused on the theme before we even got started with the game?
Well, how kind of domino piece played in, which I understood when I saw it.
Yeah.
It did make sense, and it did play domino-ish.
The description never brought that, no. I feel like, up as much.
It seems like they could have played into that more. Mm-hmm. I mean, otherwise, it's you're playing land to land. It worked.
Yeah.
Right, which made it less Carcassonne-y
mm-hmm. yep.
and more domino-y, but the description made it sound more Carcassonne
the castle
than the domino.
The castle made it more Carcassonne.
Yeah, it seemed more like an exploration game and not like a king
making yeah,
the,
land.
Oh, yeah, no, I don't get how the king came really, out.
Yeah.
Play, and I think, yeah, I mean, all the whole matching types of land and biomes and stuff, that was cool, but yeah, just
in, yeah, one of those you could swap in.
Yeah, you could put in any theme. Like, that's the thing with Euros, is usually, like, the theme is usually tacked on at the end.
But I think they're getting more thematic.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, this was definitely a, it really could have been anything that has matching
yeah.
sides. So how about the art?
Yeah, I think the art was, it was, it did what it was supposed to do. It clearly displayed what was what. There was no confusion in what matched with what. Which one are you?
Okay, so I'm making a face at Kiwi, which is yep. why he stopped.
Audio podcast.
Audio podcast, not visual. Just because I remember several times asking, wait, is that Badlands or cave? So I think, and then the grassland or forest.
I mean, it was kind of clear, but it could have been maybe a little more different.
Or less of the,
yeah.
yeah.
In my opinion, it was pretty clear.
Okay.
I agree with Baxton. I thought it was pretty clear.
I feel like, though, that's what we went in thinking the art on the cover was not drawing us. So, which makes me want to mm-hmm. ask you, Paxton, you said it was good. It's what you would expect from kind of a kids-oriented theme. So what specifically do you think was good about it that attracted you as being our youngest player at the table?
Well, I think the strategy was fairly easy, which would make sense if it was a kids' game.
I think it's actually supposed to be more family.
Yeah,
and not it's just a
family-friendly game.
Yeah.
Kids, yeah.
Like, it's still difficult enough that it's challenging to match everything up. I just figured
right, out. And to get the max points.
And I figured out how to make the 5x5.
Yeah, which actually would take some, I feel like, that visual, geometrical, spatial analysis before you get started.
But I think there's also a little bit of luck involved, too, because, like, Paxton was able to get the pieces. Like, I could have finished my 5x5, but the piece I ended up with in the last round didn't fit anywhere in my 5x5.
Right, because you either had to have it matching or attached to your castle.
Yeah, which at that point, I could no longer attach it to my castle.
Right.
So mechanics, which we're kind of already discussing, you know, spatial puzzle right. kind of thing.
Yeah.
For you, Eric, I think you kind of went into this with the whole, like, kind of patchwork where you were going to struggle with yep. that kind of aspect. Do you feel like you still
I
did?
I mean, yeah, I still did pretty bad. I did better. I was positive in points. I don't know that you could go negative, but I did stay positive, which is a big plus.
You beat Dad.
Yeah, I did not get last place. But yeah, I'm still not very good at them, I would say. But I mean, it was overall cool. I like how it kind of played.
Yeah. I like the idea of being able to select your next piece before you placed your first one. So yep. then you couldn't change the piece that you selected previously, but right. you could at least like, okay, I'm actually going to place it here instead right. of where I originally right. planned so that I can build off
yeah,
this.
Yeah, I did like how that, and then the yeah. way you change who's first player kind yep. of thing, and then the way they yeah. order. Yeah, I liked
the order.
It all fit together really well.
Yeah, no, that idea of being able to change definitely helped me a few times.
Mm-hmm. How about the rules?
I mean, the rules seem pretty easy.
Simple.
In thinking how we had started this off, maybe not just a kid-friendly game, but maybe even just non-Euro-y kind of game player, do you guys think that it kind of then with the rules and the mechanics would still be like that entry level?
I don't even know what you mean by saying Euro.
So Euro-style games
that's a good point. Are
generally more mechanic and rule-focused.
Oh, I thought you were talking about European games.
These game designers came from Europe, but they have this distinct way of focusing on kind of the mechanics where you could throw then the theme or the art.
There tends to be less like direct confrontation.
Yep.
There's sort of nobody's ever really winning by a lot. in general, because Yokohama's not true. but they're kind of, it's just a style of game versus like
Ameristyle, which would be more like Risk would be.
I was going to say Monopoly.
Risk, yeah. Monopoly.
Okay. It's a lot of direct confrontation. Stratego. You can knock people out of the game.
Yeah. I could definitely see why, going back to the family friendly piece, I could definitely see why it won. The spiel is yours.
So there you go. How about this real quick?
Okay.
We'll take a break to say, what was your vote for the spiel de yours 2017?
Okay, so BP and I are the only ones who played all three.
Right. I know mine.
Okay, so on the count of three, we just say it at the same time.
I don't know if I remember the exact name of it.
So 3, 2, 1.
Maker's Maze. Oh.
Oh, well, that was
Maze. You... It's Magic Maze.
We'll try it again.
Magic Maze.
Ready?
3, 2, 1. Magic Maze.
All right, so Magic Maze is the winner.
Yes.
Of our little 2017 Spiel des Jahres.
Of the two that I played, I would probably say King Domino. I enjoyed Quest more, I think, but I can see why King Domino won it.
Yeah.
Especially, so I just want to let our listeners know that our episode 5 of Quest for El Dorado actually just dropped today as we're recording. So we actually listened to it again. And so you still, after listening to your thoughts about it, going to go King Domino.
I think I see the way that one won. I would personally pick Quest for El Dorado.
I think for me, it would go Magic Maze, Quest for El Dorado, King Domino. Right?
Yeah. Okay, so still Magic Maze. I would probably go, God, I really don't know how much I liked.
It changes every time you talk.
Yeah. Your opinion of Quest for El Dorado is different every time we bring it up.
Okay.
All right.
I'm just going to go for first place.
Yeah.
I'm not ranking.
Okay. Player interaction.
Yeah, not so much in this one. I think it's
pretty much
like other games that are similar to this, where it's I took the piece you wanted.
I would say it's even less than that, because there's the pieces weren't really that different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I got a couple times where I was like last, so I didn't get the piece that I wanted, but the time before, I got the piece that I wanted,
right?
So I was fine.
Switches back and forth, and then you kind of know, okay, I'm not first pick. I'm not going to get the one with two crowns on it. Like, so you kind of know going, you're not like, I really want that. And then you're like, okay, well, that one has something else I could use.
But like for me, like I didn't have a single lake. Like I just stopped picking up, like even looking at lakes, because it's like, I don't want it. I don't need it. I can't put it in
anywhere. I think I was like that with the fields or whatever.
Yeah.
Or Badlands.
Yeah. So
I took most of the Badlands, and I mostly started with the Badlands because I got a 2-crown Badland.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, my strategy is basically get things with crowns and then get other things that match that.
Works.
But this might be some of the least player action of a game we've played, I think.
In a while.
So finally, would you play it again?
Maybe if someone else suggested it. I'm not going to go grab it off the shelf. I probably wouldn't have in the first place, but...
I actually say I would if I was playing with somebody who isn't too familiar with modern games. Like, you know, if I had a friend, we went to the board game cafe. They like more Scrabble or... Like games that aren't, I might pick that one as a really good sort of, hey, this is a different kind of game. We can play this. It's pretty straightforward. I can remember the rules. I think people would pick it up quick. So I don't know. I did like it. I don't know how much you could replayability you could get out of it. I feel like it would get old pretty quick.
Yeah, I mean, the only difference would be like when you scramble up the tiles and you get different tiles. If you play two player, you get to play two because you still put out four tiles.
Yeah, but I still feel like even then, like there's only so many options. Like,
I think I'm with Eric. I think I would play it again, or maybe suggest it with people who don't necessarily play games a lot.
Right.
Accent? Would you play it again?
I would play it again. I would agree with Dad and Eric that it would get old pretty quick.
Next up, we're going to be playing My Little Scythe, designed by Hobie and Vienna Cho. Artist is Noel Adelman of Endeavor Age of Sail, Gugong, Wasteland Express Delivery Service, Between Two Castles of Mavic, King Ludwig, Fireball Island, and Katie Cowell, Fire in the Library by Tony Miller. It is published by Stonemaier Games. This actually started out as a fan-made print and play that Jamie Stegmaier went ahead and published.
Yep. It won Print and Play of the Year, I think, for BGG.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
My Little Scythe is a competitive, family-friendly game in which each player controls two animal miniatures embarking upon an adventure in the Kingdom of Palm. In an effort to be the first to earn 4 trophies in 8 possible categories, players take turns choosing to move, seek, or make. These actions will allow players to increase their friendship and pies.
So we're
pies. Okay, not a typo.
Okay.
Friendship and pies. Power up their actions, complete quests, learn magic spells, deliver gems and apples to Castle Everfree, and perhaps even engage in a pie fight.
Oh, there you go.
It's not a...
The mechanics are area control, area influence, dice rolling, grid movement, pick up and deliver, and take that.
What's take that again?
It's any sort of like screwing people over.
Okay.
Yeah. Take that would be like if I played a card that was like BP moves back 6 spaces.
Oh.
That's take
that. Or like in Colt Express, punching somebody and they drop their bag. That's a take that kind of move. So anything that's like pretty aggressive player interaction.
But taking a card that somebody else wanted is not take that.
So then the box art is a bunch of little animals.
Animated
animals.
And various types of costumes. Like you've got a knight costume, a judge costume, an aviator.
A Soviet.
Farmer, it looks like, because one of them is carrying a sickle.
The working class has got to rise up.
Yeah. So this print and play started as a My Little Pony. So the two designers are a dad and a daughter. And so he had made a game for his daughter to play, and it was My Little Pony themed. But obviously IP's requirements, and they shifted it to what it is. You can kind of see that in the friendship and that kind of idea. And then the name, obviously, My Little Scythe.
So based on all this, would you pick this game off the shelf?
I don't know if I exactly pick it up off the shelf. It looks a little cheesy, the art box art does. But, I mean, it makes sense for a My Little Pony game, which it was based off of. If I knew more about it, like the backstory, I probably would pick it up off the back.
So if you'd read that description that Eric did.
If I had heard it was based off of My Little Pony thing, I would have understood it and probably picked it up.
Okay.
I've initially stayed away. Like, Eric and I have played Scythe and really liked it.
We need to do another playthrough, though, because I think we just need to play it again.
Yeah. But I just sort of assumed, based on the name, that it was My Little Pony themed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't really have any interest in playing it because I thought it was just a dumbed down kids version of Scythe, but I didn't bother to look further into it. But now that I've read the rules and learned more about it, like, I am interested to see how it plays out.
Yeah, the story of its making makes it sound interesting. And I think this being a more family focused episode, if you are like those of us who are trying to find games to play with younger players, it seems like a really great kind of intro into something that's not too heavy, but
it's not Chutes and Ladders.
Yes, exactly. And I think not being Little Pony themed helps for those who might have an aversion to purple horses.
Yeah, I think maybe they could have just moved away from that kind of name entirely.
But it's obviously appealing to some.
It is. Yeah. And I mean, I'm not the target audience.
Yeah. It, so. And My Little Pony has huge fans. So please don't write in any hate mail. Yeah.
And wouldn't a little scythe be a sickle?
Okay. Yes. So.
Hold on. Before you get into that, I was just like, I was just going to say, like, I'm with Kiwi in that I've sort of avoided it, but I heard an interview with kind of the maker and about whole like making with his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's super cool. So
yeah, that sounds like a super
That's why
process.
I like suggested this is like, oh, and it's also the best kind of family game to teach people like how do you play these complex mechanics. So I think not even necessarily as like family for kids, but family for like people who aren't really into board games, but they don't understand like the complex mechanics of a Scythe game and are maybe overwhelmed by it. But this is a good way of teaching sort of like those base mechanics that then build the foundation for
many more
I don't want to say advanced games, but
yeah, it gives you that building block so you can say like, hey, we're going to play this game. Do you remember when we played X? It works sort of like that.
Yep.
Whereas, so when someone reads Take That, that new player would be like, I know what that means.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, it's sort of like now you sit down and it's a worker placement game. You see workers in front of you. You kind of just know what to do.
Yeah.
So it's like the more kind of foundation you have, then the easier it is to pick up. All right. How was the mission?
So back to the scythe and the sickle. So at first, obviously, I wanted to go for the whole idea of the sickle. And now that I've seen the box art, I see the sickle. And of course, Most of us know the sickle as is, of course, with the hammer and sickle of the USSR. So, but instead, I decided to try to stay with the scythe idea. And so the difference between a sickle and a scythe, they still have the same curved blade. They still are for harvesting farm grains usually, but the scythe has the longer handle, whereas the sickle is just a short handheld. So think a sword hilt versus a spear shaft. Make sense? I'm getting nods. Excellent. And so
I assumed you were talking to the listener.
Great. So listener, you nodded. Which of course the first thing we all think of then when we think of a scythe would be the Grim Reaper. Right?
Oh, yeah. And you said you weren't going to talk about the Grim Reaper.
Okay, but I am. So, yeah. So then it made me start to think before, of course, I don't read the show notes beforehand. So not knowing what really the game was about, I was like, what is this? Grim Reaper for kids? That sounds like fun. But obviously, the Grim Reaper being portrayed or some sort of death being portrayed with the scythe dates back from the Black Death. Boom, boom, boom. Of course, right?
Of course.
Yes. No,
the scythe itself has been portrayed in images like dating back to actual Neolithic art, but being portrayed with death is exactly when Europeans became fascinated with the dance macabre. And one of the pieces that I think of the most that I will now probably in my lectures have this historic art and then my little scythe just for fun in my classes to talk about this fascination with death. But there is this church in Slovenia, the Trinity Church, that has death coming for all peoples with their walk of life. And standing next to the queen is a skeletal figure with a scythe in his hand. And so just you need to Google those images if you'd be out there or if you're in Slovenia and you've seen the fresco. It is that representation that comes out with the Dance of the Dead and the macabre during this period in Europeans' history where obviously it was a huge loss of population that kind of turned Europeans to the dark side, if you will.
All right, so the rule. So the game ends when a player gets their fourth trophy. There's 8 different categories that you can get. And then the play continues for one more round, so everybody kind of gets one more chance to play. If players are tied for 4, there's a couple of tiebreakers. But on a player's turn, there's 6 actions on your player board that you're allowed to take, and they get split into 3 areas. So move, seek, and make. And the big rule of the game is you can't pick the same action that you already did, but you can stay in the same area. So like seek and make both have multiple actions within them, but you can't do the same thing that you did on your turn previous.
So is this making like you're making the pies then?
Yes, you do get to make pies. Mm-hmm. So for the move action, you're able to move your seekers. So that's what the 2 miniatures that you're going to have. So generally you can move your seekers 2 spaces each, unless they're carrying apples or gems. And then you can only move them 1 space at a time. There's also portals that you can move to different areas on the map. And that's the only way you can move to Castle Everfree to take your apples and gems is via a portal. If you move your seeker onto the space of another player, that's when a battle occurs. The moving player is the attacker and the non-moving character player is the defender. And you're going to use spells and pies when you battle. So this is a callback. Well, one, the action that you can't do the last one, that's a big portion of scythe. And then the battle mechanic, how it works. So everyone's going to have a little dial and you're going to select the number of pies you wish to throw. You obviously can't go more than the number of pies you actively have. Mm-hmm. But then there are spells as well. And then the player who has the highest number is the winner of the pie fight. So that's how battles work out. Yes.
Is there a spell that gives you more pies?
I have no idea. I've never played it before. So that's the move action. The big thing about the move action, it is the only action within the move area. So you can't move in subsequent rounds. You have to do something else. For the seek, there are 2 actions, and all they're going to do is dictate the color of dice that you can roll. There's red dice that will give you apples, blue dice that will give you gems, and yellow that will give you quests. Taking 4 apples or 4 gems are 2 of the categories for trophies. You take them back to Castle Everfree. And then quests will give you certain items if you can complete the quest. The interesting part about this is so you're going to roll the dice.
And the color that appears is the terrain that you're going to put it on. You know, if I roll a brown gem, it means I have to put a gem in the brown region. Mm-hmm. If I put it on, so say your seeker miniature is in a brown area. If I put that gem in your area, I gain friendship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you have to be at a certain friendship level in order to gain trophies. So
that reminds me of Stardew Gap Valley.
And then finally, so there's two different actions within the make or seek area. And then the last area is make, which there's three actions there. So you can combine apples, you can combine gems, or you can combine both. So combining apples will create pies. Combining gems will give you spell cards. And combining both together will give you power-ups. And those power-ups will go to your make and seek areas. So you'll get better actions in the future if you do the power-ups. So players can, you can only earn one trophy a turn until the grand finale. And the grand finale occurs when somebody gets their fourth trophy. Once you're in the grand finale, everyone without four trophies is going to get one final turn, and you can get as many trophies as you can during that time period, but you still only get one action. And then that's it. That's everything.
It sounds actually really fun now that you've read through the rules.
Yeah.
Shall we play?
So we just finished a game of My Little Sight. To recap, Paxton had one trophy, BP had two, Kiwi had three, and I won with four trophies. Strategy-wise, my strategy was not friendship. I tried to keep my friendship just above
the minimum
that I could get trophies for, and then I screwed everyone over as much as I could.
Can I just say that does not surprise me?
Yeah. Well, I saw you are all going for the friendship route, and then just the cards I picked led me in the other. Because I was originally going, I had like the pie card, so I was going to get the pies, and I was going to go for the pie fight.
Mm-hmm.
But I never had a good engagement opportunity with that. So then I just hoarded resources, and I don't know, wandered to the castle.
I was just trying to go for what I thought were easy trophies to get.
Yeah.
That's what I was going for.
The only thing that I didn't really like is that you couldn't move after the other time. Like, if you moved one turn.
Right.
Like, you couldn't move again.
Yep, that's the whole idea.
Yeah, I think I just went for whatever I could get.
I basically just piled up friendship.
Yeah, you were definitely going for the friendship early on.
I got a thing that just gave me one less thing for friendship.
I think you two did the same thing. You went friendship, and then you were just trying to get apples and diamonds to turn into the castle.
I got all resources that I needed, and then Eric messed me up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you think of the theme?
It definitely wasn't My Little Pony, but you could see the My Little Pony aspects in it.
Besides shipping pies at people.
Yeah, I've never seen My Little Pony.
And that's their fighting.
I don't want hate mail from the My Little Pony fandom. So.
There are some pretty hardcore My Little Pony.
Yeah, I thought the theme was okay, and it definitely like fit more into that kids' version of Scythe.
I mean, I've never played Scythe, so I don't know that I could agree with that, but I feel like it played into that cartoony, cutesy, definitely kid-oriented. But again, I feel like the strategy was not necessarily too dumbed down.
Oh, no.
We felt like we were playing Chutes and Ladders.
It's a real game. Like, it's
a
full strategy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it fit. It's much more fun than a lot of kind of kids-oriented games, I thought.
Yep.
It had the quest. It had the fantasy, the castle.
It still had combat. It was just more like a playful combat than like a killing people. Which makes it, because Scythe is the same way, because you have these giant robot fights, and then it just goes back to base.
I believe so, yeah.
So, I mean, it's still not like... Yeah. It's kind of makes more sense to have a pie fight than a big robot fight where nothing really bad happens.
At least after the pie fight, you get some tasty pie.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Maybe.
I did like the fact that...
You did, because after the fight, you got bonus pies back.
Yeah,
oh, did I?
Yeah, you didn't. I did like the fact that, like, the way they themed it, like, I don't know what My Little Pony's, like, what the demographic is.
They would say good ponies versus bad ponies.
Yeah, demographic is, like, the type of people that are in the audience that they're trying to get. But I felt like the theme that they had on it could be tailored to anybody, boys, girls, whatever gender you want to associate with. Like, I felt like the theme was generic enough that everybody could find some
aspect of it that they would like. Yeah. And it wasn't like, this is a game for girls or this is a game for boys.
Like
or
when
whatever.
Legos came out with their friends.
Yeah, that bothers me still so much.
Yeah, like, get girls.
So they have this like Lego line that's Lego Friends or something like that. But like, it's not minifigures. It's like these weird like plastic figures that are
it's supposed to be aimed more
towards
girls. They all look
girls.
Very Barbie-esque.
Yeah, it's very Barbie-esque. And it bothers me. It's like, why don't you make Lego sets that are...
Like the theme is more appealing.
The theme is more appealing to that audience.
So the art, since we kind of drifted there.
Yeah, I think it's cute.
Art and components.
Yes, so components I thought were kind of cool.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
I think the art, I could see where the models, people could get into painting them. Ours were just white, obviously, because we were at a game cafe. Yeah, the base. And I could see where, when Kiwi was talking about the whole representation, too, and the demographics, I could see where that would then be appealing. It definitely comes across as being just, you know, very open space, blank space. And so, yeah, I would give the art 2 thumbs up. I don't know that I need, like, swag and all of it, but I could see where...
Plushes would be cute.
There you go, says the youngest Claire. Plushes would be cute. I could see where, again, where you were painting figures with your family. Mm-hmm. So it has that again.
It had a painting guide, which is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much the standard Stonemaier high quality at this point.
Like, yeah.
The great minis, great board, great...
The board was huge.
Yeah, the board, big board with...
Easy to
cool design. Easy to design, but kind of cool art on it.
Yeah. My only complaint would be that some of the dice for the seeking actions, some of the colors, especially for the quest die, those colors were very difficult to... pick out sometimes, especially for the darker colors on like that gold.
Yeah.
And definitely darker. If you go back to color impairness.
Yeah. Like that. So that was my only complaint was there were times where it was hard to figure out which color you were supposed to place stuff.
So mechanics.
I don't know what the mechanics were again. Wait, let's see if I can guess any of them.
I'm going to rename this. How did you feel like the game played?
Yeah.
Let me see if
you
I
don't
can
have to
name
know
any of them. Roll and move? Is that a mechanic?
Nope.
It's not really set collection, is there?
No.
But there's a collection of stuff.
Yeah.
Resource collection?
No. How about pick up and deliver?
Yeah, so I read that on one of the cards because I'm the only one who did the power-up cards. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's mechanic. I just did not feel, maybe it was my strategy, that I was getting the pick up and deliver.
You were the only one that wasn't doing it.
Okay.
No, you just went a different route. Yeah, I'm not.
Do you want to hear the other mechanics?
So it's just that there were just so many going on that you didn't necessarily.
Yeah, so that's how we're picking them up and taking them to the castle.
That's, right. I know what pick up and deliver because that's mint delivery.
Good job.
Thank you.
So grid movement was the movement style.
Okay.
So you're moving between grids. So not.
There was no orthogonally.
No, it was a hex grid.
Hex.
Yeah. And then there was take that, which was the mechanic I used.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then.
Stabbing people in the back.
There's almost like the reverse of take that with the friendship stuff where you're actually like, give that.
Which is a very My Little Pony.
Friendship is magic.
And then area control, area influence, which is anything where you kind of control a region. So like, you know, I kind of controlled that gray area.
We never strayed very far.
Yeah, exactly. And you don't tend to.
We had one pie fight the whole game and I only did it because I wanted the trophy.
Right.
And so that whole like.
And you picked
area.
The person who had the least resources.
That
and
was closest to me.
Yeah. Sure.
We can kind of see how like that the kind of gameplay works. Because like 3 of us were sort of, Kiwi and I moved towards your area. Mm-hmm. And so we were pushing in your kind of territory. Or probably why you had a hardest time in the game. Because that's just sort of how it works out. Whereas Paxton was kind of free to do what he wanted over there.
Right.
Yeah, and so it just sort of, it's like one of those subtle mechanics that can really impact you because you just had a harder time maneuvering. Even though we didn't have too much direct confrontation, you probably could have just walked by me, but just the fact that we're there alters how you play.
And I mean, I didn't want to fight you because after going into the one fight with Kiwi, it was like, I almost just wanted to fight just to fight, but...
And Eric also had eight pies.
I definitely had a deterrent arsenal.
I bet this kind of goes into our section on player interaction.
Well, it does a little, but first let me go back to like the movement thing where there's that style of you can't repeat an action immediately, which is designed to make you like plan ahead a little more.
Right.
So you got to think out a few turns and say, okay, I can move here, but then I need to do this, then I can do this.
And that's one of the big aspects that you did take from Scythe. Mm-hmm. Scythe was the same way.
I mean, I like it. I feel like it keeps it fresh.
Well, because you could have the issue where like, if people aren't doing that seek, where they're dropping new resources, it would
it would grind the game to a halt.
Yeah.
Or if you're also not making, you know, I mean, it does help you.
Well, like, I don't think the three of us did much making.
I didn't make anything.
I didn't make anything.
I made one pie. You made the most stuff, right? Because we were focused on pickup and delivery.
Which is, yeah, why I did not do the pickup and deliver, because I was using my resources
Fine.
Yeah.
You could definitely win that way. Rules.
I felt like they were easy to teach. I think there was a lot there. And I think it took a couple rounds before everybody kind of got it, especially with hey, you can't do, you know, more than one, you can't do the same thing twice in a row. I think that was the base point, especially for Paxton, I think.
So with the rules, there's a couple times where we weren't sure how something worked, but like BP was saying, like, oh, I looked at these special cards that kind of gave me a hint on how movement, and I feel like we almost had the same thing in Scythe. I don't quite remember because it was a while ago, where we were kind of like, we weren't exactly sure how something should work, but then it kind of gives you, based on the extra cards that say you can now do, or special power kind of cards, you're like, okay, so you must not be able to do this because this power lets you do it.
Yeah.
So, and I feel like that was common, which can be a little confusing, and it can be one of those things where you're playing it wrong, and then you draw a card, and you're like, oh, we were doing this wrong the whole time. Player interaction.
There was a good amount. I mean, from like the pie fight, and then like people searching.
Friendships.
Yeah, the friendships from like searching and placing things and paying attention to what other people are doing.
So many different trophy options. Like, I could see, like, you know, we played one pie fight the whole time just so I could get a trophy. But I would be willing to bet that there are groups that when they play the game, it's nothing but pie fights, constant pie fights. And then people like, oh crap, I need friendships so that I can get a trophy. And there's no friendship and it's just pie fights galore.
Yeah, there's a large variety. So if you brought different players into it, I feel like it's more, I would say, more a gateway game player, like, than King Domino almost. I mean, there's a lot going on, but it's...
I think if you had an adult friend that hasn't played a lot of games, I still think this would be an overwhelming game for them.
Yeah, I could see, because I think with
all the pieces,
you got six actions, there's so much on the board. Mm-hmm. Like, I think King Domino is a much better gateway.
All right. Would you play it again?
Yes.
Yes, and I would want more pie fights.
Yeah.
Less friendship, more pie fight.
It makes me want to play Scythe again.
Mm-hmm.
But I would definitely play it again.
If you have any suggestions or any comments about anything that we have talked about on today's podcast, if you are a My Little Pony fan who has played My Little Scythe, we'd love to hear from you. So please hit us up on the Twitters at First Turncast or Instagram also at First Turncast. You can also email us at firstturntabletop@gmail.com. You can find us on all of your favorite podcatchers. Please rate and review us on no longer iTunes, but on Apple Podcast is probably the most searchable, but Google Play will also work and Stitcher. So find us, rate us, review us.
Read down. You give me a script. I'll read the teleprompter.
He's a monkey. He reads whatever's on the teleprompter.
I'm Ron Burgundy.
Thing to do the end piece.
Some sort of thing.
Yeah.
To the end.
I don't need to describe. I don't need to explain myself. I just need to do it in full.
Special.
Yeah, up, down, down, left, right, left, right, B, A, 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 B, A,